Welcome to Manic Monday. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Doug.
And we're joined by special guest.
Is that me?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Oh, hi.
I'm sorry. You've done this enough. We've thought maybe you knew, but you've been doing other interviews. We understand it. It's you forgot about us. And
playing the part of Kevin for today's show.
Yeah.
You should have just answered Kevin.
Yeah, I almost went, Kevin!
It's me! It should be like when you go to the theater, it's like,
in tonight's broadcast, the part of Kevin will be played by Peter Clements.
Exactly.
Yeah, you heard that right, ladies and gentlemen. All week long, you're getting Peter Clements on the show. He just had a brand new book come out. It's called The Broken Room. It released on, March 1st? March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a chance to sit down and read it yet. I got it on Audible. I know Doug has listened to a little bit of it. Yes, Doug?
Yeah, I'm on chapter 20. So about 4 hours in, close to 4 hours in on the audiobook.
Yeah. What do you think so far?
It's good. I don't want to spoil anything.
Fair enough. Spoil it all.
There's these characters, right? And they're doing this thing. And there's one character who's telling you what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I'm at right now.
Oh my God. Okay. Jesus.
Oh, you're there. Okay.
Surprisingly, it's been a large portion of the book so far.
So how's the reaction been so far for the release?
Overall, pretty good. I was worried about this one because this is, I mean, you've listened to a little bit, Doug, so you know, it's like this is much more of like a spy action thriller than what I normally write. So it was a little something different. I wasn't sure how people were going to react when they started reading it. So many things changed on this. We got a new narrator for it.
Mm-hmm.
For the audiobook.
Is Ray Porter just too expensive now?
Some people
came out and it was just too big.
Honest truth, Ray, because Ray is fantastic. Doug, you're a ways into this, so you know this already. Jeremy, if you didn't. The two main characters in this are Latino. Mm-hmm. And so Ray and I just on our own got on the phone, started talking about it, and we're like, all right, so how do you feel about doing this? You know, playing this part, being this voice. And honest to God, Ray was like, you know what? I probably am not the right person to be narrating this.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting into the book, it's like, okay, I understand. Like, you know, like you need like a Hispanic person or someone who like from, you know, the Latin speaking countries and stuff to just have the names and the, and everything about those characters too. I mean, you have characters that are from other countries as well.
Right. It's a casting thing, you know?
Yeah.
But Ray was really cool about it because Ray has openly said he would he will drop stuff. He will work, you know, extra time so he and I can work together. But yeah, for this, he just totally stepped aside and said, no, we should get the right voice for this book.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so we went to Audible, and it turns out Audible had already been having kind of similar thoughts, so they were all for it. And then, okay, true story. So Audible comes to me, and they're like, "Well, okay, who did you have in mind?" And I'll go, "I don't know. I mean, this is your job to make the audiobook." Right. And I was like, "I mean, if I got like dream casting, let's get Pedro Pascal to narrate the book and be it." So Audible's like, huh, and they go off. And then like, I don't know, it's like a month, 2 months later. This is probably like start of the year. Mm-hmm. So now it's like January. And I'm like, so have we had any thoughts about who's going to narrate the book at this point? And my agent goes to them and they come back and like, yeah, So we tried to get Pedro Pascal.
Shut but up.
Scheduling, we couldn't work him in. And then I'm like, what? You were serious? You thought I was...
You actually went after it?
And then, of course, we have since learned he was probably filming some other show at the time. So,
yeah, he was a bit busy.
He's been a bit. Dude's got like 40 projects coming out in like the next 2 months. He's got some for Netflix. Yeah. He's got like The Last of Us for HBO. I mean, he's got
He's the guy right now. So. Yeah,
he's got that Nick Cage movie coming out, which I can't wait for us all to watch and enjoy.
Wait. I cannot wait. So amazing.
But with all of that in mind, everybody seems to really be liking it. So
that's great.
Fingers crossed. Yay.
So with that in mind, I've never, Doug and I, well, Doug may experience it a little bit because he has hit the road with his band. But after
not you, recently. Not recently.
Recently. No, no, no.
Not recently. No, not this is a long time ago.
Yeah. Doug was,
this is like 12, it's like, this is like 12 years ago.
Yeah.
No. He was on no, him. My God. No, it's like 14 years. Oh, my God. I'm old.
Doug.
And it all comes crashing down all at once.
It really does.
How does it, how does it feel to, you write something that's really personal to you, like that you plan on putting out to the public. You put it out to the public. Do you have do you have to hold back from like reading reviews, or do you get like really affected by them? I don't think I've ever asked you this about a book that when you're releasing it, but like, how do you handle the comment section and the reviews when somebody's less like. Obviously when it's good, it's great. And you're like, you feel ecstatic, but then like, I've always seen people when they put out something that they've created, it doesn't matter if you get a million people saying they love it, that one comment just eats at your soul. Does that affect you in any way?
Oh God. Yes. That is absolutely true. I think it was like the day after this came out, there was this one angry review on Audible.
I think I saw that one. It was like one of the only actual reviews on it, like the day it came out.
Was it the guy ranting about like, what the fuck? WTF? Yeah.
Why do you spend so much time doing this? Go back to the Threshold series.
Yes.
Was it that one? Yep. Yeah.
That review, exactly. And of course, it's already been like, no. And again, I was like, I'm telling myself logically, it's like it's been out for 36 hours at this point. This guy got one upvote. Mm-hmm. That is why he is currently the most helpful review.
Just
at
one. This point. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. It took at this point to make him the most helpful review. And I'm like, oh dear God. Oh God, the book is doomed. Oh, people are going to hate this. People are going
to. I saw that review. I think I got to work that morning and I was like, oh shit, that's out today. I hadn't pre-ordered it yet because I was waiting on an Audible credit, which I'd gotten like just a few days before. And so I went and I picked it, and that was the only review. And that was like the day it came out. And it was one of those like, you know, I was like, how long has this been available to people that this dude's already finished the book, apparently, you know, or whatever. And he's like, you know, it's 12 hours of this. And I was like, well, one, the audio book is not 12 hours long. So fuck off. You're wrong immediately. But, you know, I don't know. I was just like, how did you already finish it? It's like 8 a.m, man. Like, what the fuck? You start at midnight and just binge the whole thing?
Yeah, it's like, I 100% believe everyone has their own opinion. Everyone has a right to their own opinion. And every book is not going to be for everyone. I know there are going to be people who don't like this book for a lot of reasons. But yeah, I totally admit that I showed the book to a bunch of like author friends. Blackstone, the publisher, showed it to a bunch of people. Everybody came back positive about it. I had a lot of people contact me like, holy crap, this book is fantastic. This is great. And yet even so, that's what I honed in on was the one guy saying like, why do you spend all these hours on this? Oh my God, what the hell?
And then you're just like, until you start seeing the actual reviews start coming in and then you breathe a sigh of relief.
No, well, at that point, that was when I commented on that, and my partner, Colleen, was like, you're done. No more reviews. Yeah, you don't get to look at it anymore.
Look at a partner right there. Okay.
Yep. That was a perfect partner. Does that correlate as well with, since you since you've became a New York Times bestseller, have you also with this release, are you like comparing it to sales wise to be like, well, if it doesn't reach that milestone, then clearly it's a failure.
Well, the problem there is that the New York Times bestseller list is, it is kind of a random thing. Mm-hmm. Because all it is what did well this week.
Okay, so it's not like an overall.
Yeah, it's not like you have to like hit a certain tier to be number 10 and another tier to be number 9. It's literally just the top 10, you know? So it's kind of like going to like, what are the 10 most expensive things at the farmer's market this week? Mm-hmm. And next week it's going to be something entirely different, and the prices are going to be different. Mm-hmm. The analogy, I was talking to somebody recently about it. Do you guys remember back like at the start of the pandemic, there were these guys who came out with a little film and they had this sudden idea, and they basically rented and bought out their local theater and showed their movie at it. And because of this, because it was during the pandemic, they became the number one movie in America.
Yes. Yes. I read
on this. Like one theater screen.
Yep. Yep.
That's what people don't understand. That's what the New York Times bestseller list is it's not about how much money you made. It's this, it's literally just, did you sell more than everyone else? And I can sell 10 books and sell more than everyone else this week and hit the New York Times bestseller list. A friend of mine, I'll be polite, won't name him, but he hit the New York Times bestseller list and he was super excited. And he was like, oh my God. And he's talking to the publisher. So what did it sell? 20,000? Just 15,000 was in there? It sold like 1,500 copies. And he's like, what? Like, it was a slow week, you know.
Oh,
that doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah. I'd be looking at the publisher being like, okay, could you rip out my heart just a little more?
But I mean, he's still a New York Times bestselling author.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Absolutely. But this is one of the things people don't understand, that just because you get to put that in front of your name, you know, does not mean, yes, I'm currently enjoying my house in the Hollywood Hills with the kidney shaped pool while.
But you are, though, right? I mean, you are enjoying that kidney-shaped pool and the house.
I am. It's right through this wall here. If anyone's watching this, they...
Doug, if you're not been paying attention, he's got it, but he's having to build it himself. He every day he's out in the backyard digging.
Yeah, no, I've seen the updates.
I've been digging the pool by hand.
You just getting your workout in. You watch some old movies on the treadmill, and then you go bust out the pool in the backyard, yep. And you dig up some old toys. This is a fucking win-win.
Dig up toys.
Yeah.
Working on my Olympic swimming pool, which I will soon be mixing the concrete for by hand.
By hand. I buy a bag a week from Home Depot.
Yeah. But that's it. That's what people think. Like, New York Times bestseller means, and they're like, and most people don't get those. Like, no, believe it or not, I can't afford a gas lawnmower. I just have the push one.
Like the one like my grandfather used to have?
Yes, exactly. Like,
yeah.
One.
Yeah,
actually, it is your grandfather's. I bought it at a yard sale.
Exactly. I got it at a garage sale for 50 cents.
As you're pushing it, you're just yelling at yourself, I'm a New York Times bestseller.
I'm somebody dead.
Why did I buy this house on a hill? That was my like bane of my existence growing up. My house was on a hill, and mowing that thing sucked. Even with a gas powered lawnmower, it still sucked.
Yeah, and then he had to go and cry tears as he walked back into the castle.
It's not a castle. It just it appears to be one because it's on a hill. The hill is deceiving, man. It's like a 2,000 square foot house. It's not big.
That's the living room size. Don't let them fool you.
You never stepped foot inside of that house. You did see the backyard, though, yeah, and our kidney-shaped pool. hey, no joke. I was talking to my mom recently about we're talking about my parents have like a they bought a like lake house a couple of years ago after they sold their company. And there, I was like, hey, well, so when's Dad going to retire and you guys are going to sell this place? And she was like, ah, you know, I don't know. He wants to retire, but blah, blah, blah. And I was like, he'd probably make a killing on this house. And we were talking about houses, and I was like, oh, yeah, we bought ours for X amount. And she was like, how much would it kill you to know that we paid like half of that for this house? And I was like, I don't want to talk to you anymore. I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to you. Like, get the fuck out of here. Are you kidding me? So it was a different time in the 90s.
Don't look at house prices in California.
Yeah, I never will.
We are slowly inching towards that every year. In town,
now, house prices in Texas are not. They, you know, everyone used to bolster about how cheap they were, but it did, dude.
My brother sold his. You know, they had their house just outside of Houston in Katy, mm-hmm. That they sold last year, and I think they got 9 offers the day of their open house.
Yeah.
And yeah,
we were looking at our house value, and just when we bought it 7 years ago to now, it's already, we would already make that money back. And then, like essentially the price we paid for, it's like doubled in price almost. Like it's just like a couple thousand shy of like doubling in its value just in the last 7 years.
We haven't doubled. We've only had this house. This will be 4 years in May that we've had this house, and it's currently valued at almost 150% what we paid for it.
Yeah. So it's been wild. Market's crazy right now. I know. So there's that temptation, like, let's fucking sell it and get the fuck out of here. But then the problem is like, where are you going to go? Like you're competing against everyone else. And then 9 other people that tried to put an offering on your house and didn't get it.
We've half had those thoughts, and they're like, but wait, this is the house we wanted. This is, Yeah, so we'll take that money, and I'm going to build a clock tower on this house.
Oh, yes. Do it. We moved a year ago now. And when we put our house on the market, it sold within 1 hour. And that was,
holy crap.
We sold it in 1 hour, and
wow.
And they didn't eat. So they came in, they saw the house, they over offered. They offered more than what we asked. They asked for no repairs. They paid cash. They even paid all the closing costs. And we were just like, what is happening right now?
I was like, someone's either flipping that house and they're going to sell it for more, or they're going to turn it into a lease. Like, I was like, there's only a few reasons why you do that. And those are like the two main ones. You're going to flip that house and you're going to sell it for 4 times the amount you bought it for.
So you're
going to lease it out for the next 20 years.
But going to what both of you said, I've only been here a year, and they already tried to say that the house was worth 30% more of what than when we purchased it in 1 year. And we were like, no, absolutely not. We are not paying taxes on that.
So the taxes haven't gone up a whole lot, thankfully, even though the house value's gone up. It's that Chisholm Trail that's going by our house now. All the people moving south of mm-hmm. Fort Worth, right? It's just that opened up so much new stuff that like now it's like, oh shit, I can get downtown in 10 minutes with the Chisholm Trail. Okay. Like, oh yeah. So
hey, so listen, I do have a question, and you may not be able to comment on it, but I wanted to poke the bear a little bit. On Twitter a couple weeks ago, I think, I don't remember exactly. I tried to find it, but since there's been the promoting of the book and everything, it kind of got lost. So somebody, somebody asked.
Just to be clear, are you talking to Doug or are you talking to me?
Oh, I'm talking to you.
I mean, you. He's talking I'm to talk- you, but I know you what he's know, talking about. I know exactly know what he's talking about. I saw it too, and I was like,
So somebody was like, I think it was, what's the best, what's your favorite book to film or TV adaptation? That's been, and then your response was something like, it hasn't been released yet. And I think that was your first like big tease of something that hasn't happened or has happened.
I believe the thing you're referring to was like 2 weeks ago was director producer James Wan's birthday.
Yes, that's it. Yep, that's
it. And they asked, what is your favorite James Wan movie?
That's what it was. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, and you're like, it hasn't been made yet.
And as I said then, I'm not allowed to say anything yet contractually.
Okay. So,
which says everything.
Which says everything. See, you just can't say what it is, but you just essentially said something is happening.
I am hoping I can say what my favorite James Wan movie is sometime soon.
Okay. Sometime soon. What? When you say soon, what does that mean?
It's weeks? Hollywood.
Could be months.
If I could say anything, mm-hmm. which I can't, but if I could, I would probably say everything was finalized and, you know, done at the start of this year. So hopefully things could finally move forward if I could say anything.
But you can't.
But I can't.
But you can't.
I can't. So I'm glad you're understanding that I cannot say anything
right
about what James Wan might be working on right now.
At this moment. But I wish that we could get it out of you.
I mean, it's the weekend. Probably not at this
moment. Probably not at this moment. But, you know, during the weeks and during the months ahead, I mean, you know, it could be. But you can't speak of it, so it's fine.
It's not. Hypothetically, if he was working on something that was even just sort of sitting on his desk at the moment.
Right. And hypothetically, just hypothetically, if he was working on something, would you be actively involved in something like that, or would you just be a bystander?
I have no idea what you're talking about. So,
like, would you be a helper? Would you be an advisor?
Again, I don't know what you're talking about, so I couldn't say anything.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right.
Hypothetically,
of course. Yes. Of course.
Conjecturally. We could say.
Don't worry. Only two people will hear this. Hypothetically. No. One of them's James Wan. Oh, man. Okay, so before I do have one last question before we leave for Monday. So this book is completely different than anything that you've ever, that you've put out. How do you know it's the right time to write something like this or release a book like this? Like, when do you, are you able to kind of, cause I know that the publisher, does the publisher put pressure on like what you should write next, or is it how you feel at that time? Or cause I know that you probably have ideas and notes written down on books that you want to write or things that you want to develop, but you haven't yet. And how did you choose that this was the right time for this book?
I gotta be honest, I didn't. Yes, what you're saying, that producers will generally put pressure on you to, hey, this isn't a good time for that. Hey, this isn't necessarily a good time for this, whatever. I think I might be totally off base. I think my career has just barely cross the line. Like, I have like, I'm that guy in the photo finish who's got like two knuckles crossing the line, basically reaching out.
Uh-huh.
But I am at the point where I can say, this is what I'm writing next.
Mm.
And publisher's just going to say, okay. And that's it. And so I don't know if that makes me the trendsetter or if that makes me just the guy who I have just enough of a fan following that they're like, yeah, whatever, let him do what he wants. Obviously my agent and I talk about stuff a lot. You know, what we're going to work on, what we're going to do, how we're going to pitch things. The weird thing with this book is that I'd actually been working on another book, a time travel book, and like, he and I had gone back and forth about this a couple times, and we'd showed it to my editor at Random House, and he and I had gone back and forth about it. And to be terribly honest, I was getting kind of frustrated with it because I had sort of, this sounds a little weird, but I'd kind of pictured this small, intimate time travel story. And they were both pushing for it to like, oh, it needs something a little bigger here and a little bigger there. And so at one point I just said, like, this book sprang to mind. I've talked about it a bunch of places, like, what if you did this instead? And so I shot this note to my agent. I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to do something else altogether. And I wrote this. And what I didn't realize was that he thought when I said, I'm going to do something else, he thought I was taking the time travel book in a different direction. So, you know, like 8 months later, I handed him this book and he's like, okay, cool. I got to like finish up something. I'll read it. And like a week and a half, 2 weeks later, I get an email from him. And I'm like, this isn't the time travel book. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's not. It's just something else I get stuck with. And he's like, okay. And he got back to me like a week later. He read the whole thing and he's like, yeah, I think this is good. I think we can work with this. And
perfect. All right.
There you go.
So
I have a question. Just something came to mind. I'm sure you're familiar with, almost called him Brandy Sandy, Brandon Sanderson.
Yes.
Okay. Did you see his video this last week?
That he put on YouTube? His Kickstarter.
Yes. Does that irk you a little? I'm not a writer. I enjoy writing. I write some in my free time, but you know, I'm not in the like business of publishing books. But to have this motherfucker come out and be like, "Oh, I wrote 5 books during quarantine." Does that
see that's the funny thing? So many people are going off like, "Oh, other writers are jealous of how much money you made." And it's like every writer I've talked to is like, "No, how did you get the time to write 5 other books?"
That's what I'm saying, man.
Hell, like, dude.
Like less about like the how well, I mean, Kickstarter is doing great, obviously, but like I mean,
yeah, I mean, good for him, awesome. I think that's fantastic. But it's like, how did you write? Where did you get the time to do this?
5 books in a year. Like I have been writing.
How
like
this, much like, cocaine almost, like, are you doing that you can stay up that late every night?
I've been doing like a fanfic of my own like saga podcast or whatever. Like, and I haven't released it. It's only like 14 pages. It's more than 14 pages, but you know what I mean? Like, I've been working on it for like a year and a half. And it's just for like me. But and just like, what the fuck do you get all that time for 5 books? Because the way he presents it is like, oh, I wrote a book. And you're like, dang, awesome, that's pretty impressive. And then he's like, oh, by the way, and boom, I wrote another one. And you're like, oh, okay, sure. Quarantine was long, I get it. And then he's like, oh, also, 3 more. And it's like, what the fuck, bud? I'm like, holy shit. I don't. I'm not like, are you jealous of like the how successful this Kickstarter has been, but just the
$23 million,
the absolute audacity of that man to like just wave his prolific member around.
I'm like, I am, and I think any other writer, if Brandon Sanderson is listening to this right now, the best thing I can say is, God damn you. Honestly, that is what, and again, not for the money, just like the thing I am jealous of how dare you have that much focus.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, man, I don't understand.
I've been doing this for a very long time at this point. I've been doing it professionally. I've been a professional fiction writer for a long time. Before that, I was a professional journalist. And I am still in awe of people who can write that much. You guys know I'm friends with Jonathan Mabry, and he's the same way. Jonathan cranks out like 2 novels a year and comic books and a couple anthologies and all this. I'm like, how are you, what is your secret? Cause I want to write that fast. I want to be able to do it. And the best I've ever been able to manage is, I think I got 1 book done sitting down to write to turning it into an editor. I think my record is just shy of 8 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this dude did 5. Like, that's what I'm saying.
I know.
And it's Brandon Sanderson. And he's one of those motherfuckers that like is wordy. Like he's like Tolkien of our era. This dude was like creating languages and worlds and fucking science to back it up. And it's just like, bud, how? I don't understand.
I think it is absolutely fantastic. I think his Kickstarter is fantastic.
Yeah.
I am in awe. Honest, serious awe that he managed to do all this on so many levels, and screw him.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, and the fact that he's just like taking over like other projects also at the same time, where it's like, oh yeah, I guess yeah. I'm gonna work on this Wheel of Time stuff too.
Oh my god. I mean, I am so impressed and jealous as hell, and but not, of course, jealous of the things everyone would probably think I am. The money, yeah, the money's nice, but I was actually talking with someone this week, and that, yes, we look at that and think, holy crap, he made all this money,
but then still, when you sort of
figure,
you gotta publish it, and you gotta actually print.
He's gonna print it. He's gonna hire people to do art. He's gonna hire people to do layouts. He's gonna, at this point, he literally needs to hire his own distribution company.
Like yeah, well, especially for this project, especially the whole Kickstarter thing. Yeah, it's a whole, and that's where all that money is gonna go towards. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, I would love to know, in the interest of transparency, not like in the ha ha, what do you really do? But I think it would be very enlightening to a lot of people. How much is he actually going to take home at the end of this?
Right.
It looks really cool seeing those big numbers, even with, oh, I'm self-publishing this, haha, has this killed big publishing, blah, blah. At the end, what does he actually make off this?
Yeah.
So far, he still has 24 days to go on this.
And, it was like 3 million the day I saw it, and that was like a day after it dropped. Not even a day after. Maybe it was like, it was same day.
It's about to cross 25 million.
Oof. Yeah, it was 13 last I saw. Yeah. So
it's about to cross. It was past 3 million. Again, I saw the day he dropped it, and I saw it about 4 p.m. and he dropped it around like 8 or 9 a.m. I guess his time. And it was like, damn, bud. And I haven't backed it yet. I mean, I would see
this as like, God, I have no idea how much it would cost to distribute this whole thing, but I can't see it costing more than $10 to $15 million to completely put this whole thing out.
Well, he's got books, but then he also has like a loot crate thing that they're doing also for tiers. Like, there's, you'll get stuff to deal with his novels and stuff as well. It's like a little like loot
boxes. You get bonus material on top of that. I mean, honestly, just figure, if nothing else, then it sounds really dumb. How much time is it going to take just to box this stuff up and figure how many people do you have to hire to box this stuff up and put labels on it and one way or another get it shipped out?
I mean, I guess he could pay a distribution company to make that run for him, right? Like, a facility that's already up and running, like the publishers already, or do the publishers own those? Do they own or do they pay them out as well? Because I'm sure
depends he could just on the
do
publisher.
This, yeah, I'm sure he could do the same thing where he could just pay a print house to.
He could, but I mean, at this point, he's dealing with such gigantic numbers.
Yeah, he's got 105,000 backers right now.
How many?
105,000.
105,000.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So if you're hiring a distribution company and saying, just for simplicity, I just need to do 100,000 loot crates.
And not only that, but 500,000 books, because that's 105,000, and you owe them each 5 books.
Well, okay, I will say one of the tiers is just a PDF. That's like the bottom tier, just PDF. And then there's another tier that's PDF and audiobook. But that's another thing we haven't talked about. You got to fucking hire an engineer, a studio, a voice actor. Yeah. You still have all of that to do.
No, and I'm sure he planned all this out of like, what is this going to cost? Yeah. What is it going to? But it is, honestly, if anything else, I'm hoping him doing this and him doing this so big and publicly is going to sort of cast a light on what it costs to do this stuff. That I think a lot of people have this idea that, like, okay, obviously there's a lot of issues with big publishers, you know, dealing with Random House, dealing with Simon & Schuster, you know, whoever. But the truth is, it's not like they're ha 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 cackling evilly and throwing a couple of coins while they rake in millions. It really is that it costs this much to do stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they're undoubtedly making profit. I'm not denying that. but it's not quite the thing that people were pushing for so long that, ha, 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 they're just screwing everyone over. And I think this is going to sort of highlight, look, all the stuff costs money. Yes, he did this. It was spectacular, and it's amazing. And we should all be very, very, very impressed by it. But I think we're also going to see how much does all this cost.
And I think we have to also understand that this isn't the norm. Like, your normal, you know, you can't go out and self-publish
and that too, yes,
this kind of success.
Right. That Brandon Sanderson is a huge name. And yeah. and him doing this is not the same as, you know, Steve from Iowa yeah. deciding to do a Kickstarter for his 5 new books. Mm-hmm. So, true. and that is something else that needs to be kept in mind.
Yeah. So. Anyways. All right. Okay. All right. I think that's a long Monday episode.
That's good. Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. No. This was a wonderful conversation.
I'm blabbing again. Everyone, not Kevin, is very talky this week.
Okay, so tomorrow we got our top 5 Tuesday. We're going to be talking about our top 5 Batmans, and I mean, how could we not with the release of the Batman? So stay tuned for that. We'll run those down. Until tomorrow, I'm Jeremy.
I'm Doug.
And I'm not Kevin.
Yeah, boom.
Wait, I am Peter Klein, though.